Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Hi, everybody. Today is the 75th anniversary of the Hartford Circus Fire. So today we are revisiting our March 11th, 2015 episode on that tragedy.
And this fire has been in the news lately, both because of the anniversary and because of efforts to potentially use DNA evidence to try to figure out the identities of some of the unidentified victims of the tragedy. There are currently 5 unknown victims buried at Northwood Cemetery, and court proceedings regarding the potential exhumations of those bodies are ongoing. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
The podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I am Holly Fry.
And today we have another frequent listener request, which is the Hartford Circus Fire. We've gotten a lot of requests for it before, and then every time we talk about a fire, it seems like people ask for more fires. So we've gotten lots of requests for this one. And there are actually lots of books about the Hartford Circus Fire, and they don't agree with each other in some pretty fundamental ways. They draw really vastly different conclusions about everything from who started the fire, if anyone deliberately started it, and the identity of the most famous unidentified victim. There's just a lot of discrepancy between them all, and I really didn't relish the idea of reading through multiple books that were effectively quarreling with each other about what happened. So I took a little bit of a different tack when researching this article, and that was that instead of reading lots of books, I read historical newspapers that were published at the time of this tragedy, and I followed the story as it happened. So most of the information in today's episode comes from the New York Times and the Boston Globe, which was then the Daily Boston Globe, as it was reported on the day. And I didn't have access to the archives of the Hartford Courant, which would be the logical paper to read because it was the local paper to where this tragedy happened. But I did read some of their more recent coverage of retrospectives and updates and things like that. So we're going to talk about the Hartford Circus Fire.
So the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, which we are just going to kind of shorten to Ringling Brothers or Ringling for the sake of simplicity as needed, so we're not whipping out a huge phrase every time we have to reference it, was filled with about 8,000 people in Hartford, Connecticut on July 6th of 1944.
And the big top at the circus was big. Really big. I mean, the name was suitable for this one. It was 600 feet long and 220 feet wide. So that's about 20 by 60 meters. And it weighed 20 tons. While it had about 8,000 people in it on this particular day, it could hold up to 12,000.
And because this was World War II, most of the men of Hartford were either away fighting or they were working multiple shifts at nearby factories. So overwhelmingly, the people in the audience were children, mothers, and grandparents.
The show started at 2 in the afternoon, and at about 2:40, a big cat show in the center ring had just wrapped up. The famous Flying Willendas were starting their high wire act up above, and people started to notice a flame working its way up the side of the tent near the men's restroom by the main entrance.
The fire spread extremely quickly. By the time a trio of ushers got there with buckets of water, it was already too big for them to put out. Almost simultaneously, people started yelling fire, and the band switched to playing Stars and Stripes Forever, known in the business as the Disaster March, and used to signal that there is an emergency.
People in the top rows of the bleachers jumped down into the straw that was below them and made for the exits or went out under the tent's sidewalls. The people who were up in the top of the bleachers overall fared better than the people who were lower down for that reason, because the people who were closer to the floor got caught in the resulting stampede. Parents and entertainers literally threw children over animal cages that were blocking the exits. Some of them cut their way out of the tent with pocket knives.
The Willendas, at risk of being trapped above the fire, slid down ropes to the ground. The performer's exit was blocked by the crowd, so they headed for one of the exits blocked by animal cages. Some climbed over, while others tried to feed some of the crowd through the animal chutes that would lead out of the tent.
Famous clown Emmett Kelly, who was in his sad tramp clown role of Weary Willie, was actually part of the Willendas act. While they did their work up in the top of the tent, he would run around below them with a little butterfly net. When he heard people screaming, he thought that one of the Willendas had fallen, and so he looked out and saw that the tent was on fire. He ran back to his dressing room to grab the buckets that he would use to clean himself up after the show was over, and he filled them with water at a horse trough. Then he ran back in to try to put the fire out.
He threw the water onto the burning tent, but it was far too late. The fire was much too big to be put out by a couple of buckets. So instead, he started trying to evacuate children from the tent. The blaze was very close to the main entrance, so he started trying to guide people to a side exit that was not on fire.
Some of the kids were actually scared of him. They were scared anyway, but then they were scared because this clown was talking to him. But he did get as many of the kids around him as he could to safety. And then he saw that the fire was getting close to a set of gas engines that operated some of the circus equipment. So he refilled his buckets and tried to soak the canvas near the engines as much as possible, hopefully making them less likely to catch fire. Then he escaped from the tent himself.
There are actually pictures of Emmett Kelly still in his makeup carrying buckets that were taken the day of the fire. And that led to this event being nicknamed the Day the Clowns Cried.
Another heroic act by one of the entertainers came from big cat trainer Mae Kovar. She was at the center of the tent where her animal act had just concluded. There was still a panther in the metal cage that was part of the big cat show. And she knew that if she didn't get both herself and the panther out and then secure all the cages of the other big cats who were part of the show, that they had the potential to break loose in all of the chaos and cause more injuries and deaths.
Not surprisingly, if you have ever spent time around animals that are panicked, this terrified panther balked at going down the chute that led back to its cages outside. It was just terrified. So Kovar used a whip, which was really part of her costume and not part of how she handled animals, to try to herd it into the chute. And once it was on its way, she realized that she was trapped. The escaping crowd had packed against the door leading out of the cage. So she escaped by following the panther down the exit chute, and then she got the big cat's cages secure so that they could not escape into the crowd.
The big top collapsed behind her, and this had only been about 10 minutes since the fire started, and it burned so hot that it literally melted the tent poles and the animal cage that was at the middle of the center ring. As the tent fell on fire, it trapped a lot of people who were still inside trying to escape.
Although none of the circus employees were killed, possibly because they knew they could get out of just about any part of the tent by going under the sidewalls, many were badly burned as they tried to get others to safety and as they formed bucket brigades to try to extinguish the fire. Since no animals were in the tent and the fire didn't spread to the sideshow or the menagerie, no animals were hurt or killed in the blaze.
168 people died. Half of them were children, and a third of them were ages 9 and younger. Only a handful of those lost were adult men. 4 entire families died, and the children of 5 other families were orphaned. There were also 682 injuries.
And we're going to talk about sort of the aftermath and how Hartford responded to this tragedy after we take a little break and have a word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So to return to the city of Hartford, Army and Navy forces were deployed to the scene of the fire, along with 300 ambulances and 1,500 Red Cross volunteers. Red Cross involvement with the victims of this disaster actually went on for almost a year. State Guardsmen were deployed as well. A shipment of 6 blood plasma converters was flown in from Boston, and the doctors who worked with the burn patients credited this increased availability of plasma with saving many lives.
A morgue was set up at the Hartford Armory, and bodies were laid out in the hopes that next of kin would be able to identify their families. But the fire burned so hot that some of the bodies inside were essentially cremated already, and it melted some of the steel girders that held up the tent.
There was a series of investigations. State Policy Commissioner Edward J. Hickey, acting as state fire marshal, issued a report that blamed not only the Ringling Brothers staff responsible for the tent, but also the city of Hartford for not having inspected the circus or the tent beforehand. Part of the report read, "No arrangements were made or requested by any representative of the circus for firemen or for firefighting equipment to be in attendance upon the circus grounds during any performance. The Hartford Fire Department did not detail any firemen or assign any firefighting apparatus to be in attendance at the circus grounds during any of the performances." That's where the quote ends. "The only inspection of the circus that the city had conducted was on the part of the building supervisor's office, which had judged that the erection of the tent, the bleachers, and the exits was satisfactory, which was the same as in previous years."
So aside from that, the big top itself was highly flammable. It had been waterproofed using paraffin that was dissolved in gasoline, and that was actually a pretty common method of waterproofing materials at the time. When testifying in the investigation, then Ringling President Robert Ringling claimed that he hadn't been able to find a material that was both waterproof and fireproof because the nation was at war, so resources were in high demand and low availability. He also claimed that the war had left the circus shorthanded, which is why there were fewer firefighters on staff.
Another report filed by Frank E. Healy named 7 employees of the circus responsible for the fire: James A. Haley, vice president; George W. Smith, general manager; Leonard S. Aylesworth, chief tentman; David W. Blanchfield, chief truckman; Edward W. Vierstig, chief electrician; William Cayley, chief seatman; and Samuel Clark, seatman. The 2 seatmen were supposed to remain under the bleachers during the show, and if they'd been there, chances are one of them would have seen the fire when it was much smaller and stomped it out, which would have prevented the whole disaster. The Ringling Brothers Circus, as a corporation, was also charged with involuntary manslaughter, along with all 7 men, although the charges against Clark were eventually dropped.
All 7 of the men and the circus pleaded no contest. Their defense counsel maintained that they were innocent, but were pleading no contest to avoid a lengthy trial. He also claimed that they were all essential to the circus resuming operations in order to try to get a lighter sentence.
It probably sounds callous that they were all so interested in returning to work, but one of the reasons that they were so eager to resume circus operations is that stopping the show was costing the circus about $10,000 a day, and possibly believing that doing so would get them more leniency, the circus had agreed to take full responsibility for the fire and to pay all of the claims that were brought against it. Although the circus was insured, this insurance wasn't enough to pay off all of the claims, which early estimates put at $1 million. It turned out to actually be a lot more. So they weren't just saying we have to return to work as a way to get out of it. Like, they genuinely needed to return to work to make enough money to be able to pay off these lawsuits.
A superior court judge permitted the circus to collect its property and leave town on July 14th of 1944. And it returned to its winter quarters in Sarasota, Florida, to regroup and return to work so it could pay off its remaining debts to the victims.
Arbitration took 6 years. The arbitration board awarded nearly $4 million to 551 claimants. The average award was around $7,000, although they ranged from $1,000 to $100,000. A professional dancer named Catherine R. Martin was burned over 50% of her body and was hospitalized for 6 months, and she received the largest settlement. Patricia Murray, who was 5 at the time of the fire, lost both of her parents and her 3-year-old brother, and she was awarded $90,000.
And as we talked about in our episode on Katie Sanduina, this is often cited as the first Chapter 11 bankruptcy case. But the official classification of Chapter 11 didn't really come around until later. However, the structure was quite similar. In what became known as the Hartford Arbitration Agreement, the circus went into receivership, promising to put all of its profits towards paying the claims and not incur any unusual expenses until all of that was paid off.
Yeah, we didn't say in the Katie Sandwina episode that it specifically was the Hartford Circus Fire that we were referencing, but it was, if you were curious. Hartford lawyer Edward Rogan was named as the receiver, and he took over financial operations for the circus while the circus continued to operate during the proceedings of the arbitration. At this time, this was a completely new strategy for a business that was dealing with extreme financial duress. Happens a lot more often nowadays. This really set the precedent for it.
The circus finally left receivership in July of 1954 when the court authorized payments to Rogan and Julius B. Schatz, who had served as the circus's counsel. Schatz received $100,000 and Rogan received $60,000, a fraction of his original $225,000 request.
As sort of a side note, while overseeing the circus's financial affairs, Rogan also reported that in spite of the Hartford tragedy, the 1944 season was, at that point, the best season in the Ringling Brothers circus history.
Along with many other governments, in the wake of this fire, the Connecticut General Assembly later passed extremely strict fire safety measures for tent circuses. Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey didn't return to the state for years, and they didn't return to Hartford for decades. When the circus tried to arrange an appearance in East Hartford in 1954, the city refused. They flatly said no. And so the circus did not return to Hartford until the 1970s.
It's still not completely clear what caused the fire. Initial results blamed a carelessly tossed cigarette. A later theory was a short circuit in the wiring in the men's room. And another theory is that it was deliberately set. The city has at various points reopened the case to re-examine the evidence, and there have also been people that have more re-examined all the evidence as a personal hobby.
In 1950, an Ohio man named Robert D. Segee, we're guessing on that pronunciation because we could not find one online that was definitive, claimed that he had set the fire deliberately, saying that he was a roustabout at the circus at the time. He claimed that he had been told to do this by a hallucination of, quote, a red Indian. And while he had pleaded guilty to other arson charges in the Circleville, Ohio area, and served time for those offenses, he was never actually charged in the Hartford Circus fire. And in the end, investigators were generally doubtful that he had actually been involved. There were a lot of inconsistencies and holes in his statements, and some of his claims regarding other crimes were kind of outlandish, and he did later recant his confession.
If you go poking around on the internet, or if you have previously poked around on the internet, you will find claims, some of them on pretty reputable websites, that he served time in Ohio for the Hartford Circus Fire. The time he served in Ohio was actually for other crimes that were committed in Ohio and not for the Hartford Circus Fire. And all of this seems to come from a misunderstanding in a high school student's paper, which perhaps the more recent writers who have used it as a resource didn't realize was by a high school student. I'm 100% not dissing high school students. This paper overall I've read is extremely good. And the news coverage at the time of this guy and his confession, a lot of it is worded very confusingly because he is framed as the man who confessed to the Hartford Circus Fire. So it's sort of the man who confessed to the Hartford Circus Fire serves time. He was serving time for something else.
Right. And there is also around this case a sort of famous unidentified victim. There are several, actually. And we're going to delve into their stories after we take a little break and have a word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So today there is a memorial in Hartford, Connecticut, and the middle of it is where the center pole of the Big Top stood. Around the perimeter, there are several dogwood trees that note where the perimeter of the tent would have been. There's also a monument listing the names of the people who died and several plaques that give a timeline of what happened during the fire.
There's also a memorial at Northwood Cemetery for the victims of the fire who were not identified. Three unidentified children and three adults were buried there on July 10th of 1944, and an unidentified baby was cremated.
And I didn't put it in here, but Northwood Cemetery is not actually in Hartford proper. It's in like a neighboring community. Only one of these six bodies that were buried at Northwood Cemetery has ever been identified. And this was an 8-year-old girl who died in the fire and came to be known as Little Miss 1565 after the number that she was assigned at the morgue. She wasn't identified for years after the fire. She had been trampled during the stampede as people tried to escape. She died of her injuries about 3 hours after being found, but since her face wasn't very badly burned, they were hopeful that her family would find her. Her features were really recognizable, and her picture was published in the newspapers. Her story really caught the hearts of a lot of people who were following the tragedy as it unfolded, especially as the attention kept returning to her case to try to identify who she was.
And police theorize that her family must have been new to the area and that her parents must have been killed in the fire. Or perhaps some other family had mistaken a different badly burned body as their own child, leaving Little Miss 1565 behind.
The search for Little Miss 1565's family went on for months. Her picture was in papers in Hartford, Boston, New York, and other northeastern cities. There were calls that came in from all over New England from people who claimed that she was their relative, but they didn't pan out. The various things didn't match up. I think they were using dental records, and dental records didn't match.
For decades, Hartford police brought flowers to the grave at Christmas and on the anniversary of the fire. And the coverage of that tradition would start this cycle of letters and calls about Little Miss 1565 all over again.
In 1991, so almost 50 years after the fire, Hartford Fire Lieutenant Rick Davey identified Little Miss 1565 as Eleanor Cook. He interviewed surviving family members of various families in the hope of finding out who this little girl was. He also did a lengthy reinvestigation of the fire itself. Eleanor's surviving brother, Donald, who was 9 at the time of the fire and was there but escaped, confirmed her identification.
And the reason that she hadn't been identified at the time of the event was that her mother, Mildred Cook, had been so badly burned in the fire that she was unconscious for weeks, and she ended up hospitalized for 6 months. Her son, Edward, was 6, and he had also died in the fire. And once Mildred was well enough to leave, she was too traumatized to look for her daughter's body.
An amended death certificate was issued for Eleanor on March 8, 1991, and her remains were reinterred next to her deceased brother, where the gravestone had previously marked an empty grave.
However, there are still people who actually question this identification, in part because other members of the family had said Little Miss 1565 was not Eleanor at the time of the fire. In fact, this had made Donald reluctant to ask about it. He worried that he would upset his mother or his aunt, who had made the initial identification.
In a weird recent twist, upon his retirement, Hartford Fire Captain William Pond destroyed the photos of her that had hung in the firehouse of Engine Company 14 for more than 25 years, saying he was afraid that her soul would never find rest otherwise. Following letters to the editor after this are kind of divided about whether that was the right thing to do or not.
I mean, I would have questions of, like, was this something that a decision that he made solely on his own, or were other people involved?
He seems to have been trying to get other fire department leadership to take it down for a long time, and was shut down every time he asked about it. And so he did it himself as he was retiring.
Figuring he was untouchable at that point.
Bye. That seems to be, that is what I would read into it, yes.
Huh.
So yeah, it's sort of an odd coda to that whole story.
It is.
There are definitely, yeah, there are definitely some unanswered questions that will probably remain forever about the fire and exactly what happened. But it was definitely a tragedy. It definitely led to some much more stringent rules, especially about tent circuses in particular. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action, and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network. Work.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.